Hey, can we be really honest with each other? The business of coaching is not an easy business. Coaching may come very natural for you. You may be one of those people that got into coaching because you realize you've been doing coaching your entire life. So coaching might be real easy. But all those messy business pieces can make it kind of a challenge. It is our own gauntlet to be able to move through and to move around. And quite honestly, I think the business of coaching is where we as coaches learn some of the greatest lessons of our lives. But how can we make it easier? That was one of the reasons that I started this podcast, Raving Coaches. And it is the driving reason that I have partnered with Elaine Turso to bring you the Elevate Your Coaching Summit. Coming January 17th, we will be having a one-day summit for coaches. We are going to put in front of you some of the best experts in the industry in specific areas of your coaching business. So, marketing, what am I supposed to do? Here are some options because you have to know your options. Branding, what's that all about? Shh, sales, that ugly little word that coaches have to get real comfortable with. Sales. What are the aspects of sales that you may need help in? Should you become a speaker, a podcaster, an author, a video vlogger, start your own Facebook group? But how will you know what's right for you? The Elevate Your Coaching Summit. During the summit, you not only will have a plethora of options explained to you, like that buffet that I always talk about on our podcast episodes. Here's the buffet. What's right for you? Second, you're going to have time built into the one-day summit to be able to discern your implementation steps. I hate when a summit is speaker after speaker after speaker, and there's no time to really think, I'm going to apply this, and here's how. We're building that in. Please, won't you think about joining me for the January 17th Elevate Your Coaching Summit? To get more information, you can check the show notes.
This is the Raving Coaches Podcast, where we get real about the business of coaching. Here, our guests discuss the gifts and joys of coaching and their struggles, challenges, and lessons. Now, here's our host, Laura Holloman.
In today's episode of the podcast, we are talking to Paula. Paula is, I guess she'd be considered coach for business people. Maybe not necessarily a business coach, but she is a builder endotype. Here's what I love about builder endotypes, right? They see things as processes. It's kind of like an engineer's mind. And one of the things that Paula says about herself, I manage the process, you manage the progress. What she's doing is she is bringing neuroscience, emotional intelligence, energy management, and coaching concepts into the workplace and specifically towards leaders who are moving up. So, the middle management, who maybe this is the first time leading, maybe they want to be better leaders and they want to gain some skills to be able to learn how to lead their way up, which is the name of her company, Leading Up. And you know, those of us who are leaders, and I think coaches in general, we are leaders. You know, the toughest people that we have to lead is ourselves. Oh, yeah. Like, I am uniquely familiar with this concept. And so she's doing a very interesting thing about bringing emotional intelligence into a corporate and office space. So a lovely conversation. We talk about a lot of the iceberg emotions, she calls them. Brené Brown, our friend, and a friend to all coaches, I think, talks about how when she surveyed a number of people, I forget it was like the average number of emotions people could name when they were quizzed, something like 3, 4, 5 emotions, right? Happy, sad, mad. Those are iceberg emotions. They have a whole lot of little emotions underneath. Now, one of the reasons I love this and what I want you to listen for is how to build your own emotional resiliency as an entrepreneur and as a small business owner. Because if you thought you were going to come into small business and come into the coaching world, and it was going to be all rainbow, unicorns, and glitter, I'm sorry, friend. It's not. You picked as a career move, you chose to be self-aware. You chose to help other people with their self-awareness. So you swim every day into the sea of self-awareness. And if there's one thing I know is that that sea can be turbulent at times for us personally. How many times have you been coaching somebody around their stuff and you're like, oh, this is so my stuff too. Yeah, me too. Emotional intelligence is a huge skill. So please join me as we listen to Paula, and she tells us a little bit more about how she does it and some of her, what she's observed inside that work environment with emotional intelligence. Paula, I'm so excited to have you on this episode of Raving Coaches. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, thanks. I was excited to get the invite, and I'm really looking forward to see where this conversation takes us.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we'll have some fun and be able to explore all kinds of space. Tell us and our listeners a little bit about yourself first, who you are, what you do, who you are coaching for and with. Just kind of fill us in on your background a little.
Sure. Yeah. I spent about 30 years as an HR director in the hotel industry. So in the hotel industry, it's kind of like the army, but a little bit better, I think. The way you go to your career is you go to different locations. So while most of that, I would say probably the first 13 years of my career was in the Milwaukee area. That's my home. But from there, I moved to Palm Springs. And from there, I went to Sacramento. Both of those places, well, Sacramento, I spent about 4.5 years. I could only take a year in the desert. Then after Sacramento, I went to Jamaica. I had an opportunity to work with a Five Diamond property, and I hadn't had that yet. And so I spent about 18 months in Jamaica. From there, I went to Boston, from Boston to Madison, Madison to Chicago, and then back to Milwaukee. So with that, I had an opportunity really to learn a lot of different cultures, try a lot of different really delicious food.
Yeah.
From where people do it really well, because it's their home food. But really meet a lot of interesting people. And you can't not be nice and work in hospitality. So worked with some really compassionate people, people that were really service oriented. And so that it was really neat to be able to get to know people in that way and also help them grow. Hospitality doesn't have the, I guess, the sexiness of other industries. And so sometimes we struggled with recruiting. But when we found somebody that was really focused on making a guest stay excellent, regardless if they were in the front of the house, so front desk, server, or if they were in the heart of house, laundry, engineering, if they really were focused on providing excellent guest service, those are the people that we wanted. And those were the people that were really great to work with because they were focused on the right thing. And so that's, you know, after a while, that got kind of old of packing and moving and things like that. And I kept looking for a role that would allow me to do more people development. So even from the get-go, when I started, I knew that's what drew me in. And the more I changed jobs, it was kind of that definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again. And finally, the light bulb went off, like, it's not going to happen. And so about 3 years ago, a couple of things happened. My mother was aging, and we were at the point to decide, do we put her in a facility? She didn't really want to go, but it was getting harder for her to live in her own home. So as the youngest of five, I didn't have any kids. It made the most sense for me to move in with her. So I left my job in Chicago, moved in with her August of 19, really just to be a companion, help her live more comfortably. She ended up passing away in May of 2020, but I'm so thankful for those 8 or 9 months just to be there for her and being there when she needed me most. And so I also took that opportunity of that time to then start my business because I knew I wasn't going to be able to do what I wanted to do within the workplace. And I saw this as an opportunity to help her, but also allow me the time because it's really hard to build a business when you're working more than full time. It was taking me years. I'm like, okay, if I'm going to do this, let's do it. And so jumped in the deep end and tried to build my business. We all know what happened in March of 2020.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit of a rough start, but that actually gave me time to do some more work that helped me be better able to serve my clients. So my clients are corporate clients. Lately, it's been middle-level managers. So they might be in their first leadership role or they've had a few promotions and they're trying to figure out, okay, so how do I get to that next level? Or how do I do this even better? So I work with them mostly on emotional intelligence and the neuroscience behind leadership. Companies, at least from my experience, we did really well at teaching them what to do. We didn't really teach them or help them figure out who do you need to be in order to do that well and do it authentically. And so they're doing all the things, their own definition of insanity, they're doing all the things and doing all the things, and they're checking off all the boxes, but employers aren't getting the engagement that they want. They're not building true feedback mechanisms. They're not building empathy because they're not helping those managers figure out, okay, so who do I need to be in order to do this leadership role well? Because they're just imitating other people that are reasonable facsimiles of the leader that they truly see themselves to be, but they just don't know how to get there. So I help them kind of bridge that gap and figure out, okay, so what's in your way? Lately, it's been not feeling comfortable with conflict and some very simple things. You know, some of my candidates have, or clients have been candidates, and they don't know how to tell one employer that they've chosen another job.
Sure.
And they ghost them. And I think most industries are small worlds, and people move around and people remember people who have ghosted them. So it's helping them figure out, okay, so how can I have that? What do I need to think differently in order to have that conversation go the way I wanted to do for myself? Because they can only control themselves. So helping them figure out, it's not about the other person. It's about, can you walk out of that room and feel like, you know what? You did it well. You know, you weren't the jerk. You didn't ghost. And so that's lately has been a lot of where my work is. I think that's coincidentally because we're in the time of year where if employers are doing annual reviews, they're doing them now. And so managers are trying to figure out, okay, I haven't talked to this person all year and HR wants me to be honest. And how do I be honest when I know I'm going to have to be a jerk? Okay, how do you unravel that and set yourself up for the following year to do it better and build the relationship in that?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's great. So are people hiring you, are the middle managers hiring you on from on their own, or are you selling your services to the company, the corporation?
It's a little bit of both. You know, with a few of them, you know, I partner with some other coaches, and so they get to pick who fits them. So they have a profile and they they pick who they'd like to work with based on what they're ready to do, what that coach specializes in. But then I have a fair amount of people that I've sourced on my own. And it's just through conversations. And they're like, what you're talking about, emotional intelligence, I kind of realize I don't know as much as I think I know. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm not doing it as well. And maybe I could have less stress. Maybe I could get that promotion. And figuring, how do I not put somebody in the fear-based brain? That's the neuroscience part of it. And if they are, how do I pull them out? Because I can't have the conversation until we're both in the executive brain. So those individual clients are like,
That's fascinating. I think that makes a lot of sense. I was talking to another coach that I'm working with right now. We're actually working on her branding, and she is in a similar space, using different tools, but helping come in. And she describes it as, I help people take responsibility for their own stuff that they're bringing into the conversation. So those emotions or, the wiring that's already starting to fire you up, or you get fired up during the middle of a conversation inside an office, and knowing how to slow your roll, ask for a timeout, different mechanisms and different tools. But you're actually helping those middle managers not only deal with their own stuff, but what I heard you say is you're helping them to be able to deal or to provide tools to help other people calm.
Yeah, because we lead with the energy we bring into the room. So if I come into the conversation really passionate and that kind of stuff, as human beings, we're going to mirror each other. Okay. And so you have those motivational speakers and everybody leaves. But it also happens when somebody comes at you with anger or frustration, and it's that high level of energy, and your brain, your fear-based brain sees that as a threat just as much as they see a physical threat. So if I've got a fist, they're going to see that as a threat, but also words, you always, you never. And they're going to go into their fear-based brain, and then it's all going to be defense. And I've read it, and I don't remember where it was, but there are some scientists that believe that you physically cannot hear when you are in that fear-based brain. There's something physical that happens that it's, you're kind of like the Peanuts teacher. And so I work with my clients to figure out, okay, so how can you introduce a topic that might be uncomfortable in a way that is candid and is truthful and is productive, but also isn't automatically going to trigger that fear-based, but also how to notice when that other person is like, okay, they're slipping back, they're defending. Okay, let's reel it back or take a pause to say, let's stop right now and let's come back. Because this isn't working for either of us. And I can see that you're upset. And it's important enough for me, for you to be able to get this information. Because that's the only way that we're going to be able to talk about perhaps a career limiting move, a behavior that's getting in the way. Because at some point, I've had some clients who didn't realize what they were doing was upsetting other people. And it's impacting their promotion abilities to say, you're not ready. I mean, I had one client that he was 3 years from retirement, and our work was all around emotional intelligence and how he could display it with his team members. But he came to realize, wow, had I known this for the last 27 years, I would have had a much different relationship people. But the sad part was, none of his leaders had the courage to sit down and have a conversation with him. It was through our work that he came to realize that 3 years from retiring. And so he's dialing back. I was like, oh man, we need to help leaders be able to have those conversations and do them well and build the relationship. Because how do I trust a leader who doesn't tell me I have spinach in my teeth?
Correct.
You know, and I walk off a stage and, you know, I see a picture. I'm like, oh my gosh, why didn't you tell me? Now I don't trust you.
Right.
Because you didn't help me overcome something that was holding me back. So
I think one of the challenges in terms of this kind of communication style or the spinach in the teeth moment, right? Not telling somebody what seems super obvious to us is that we all think we think the same.
Mm-hmm.
We all think we operate and we think the same. So here I'm noticing, right? You're wearing your anger all over you on a regular basis. You're wearing your stress all over you on a regular basis. And I'm pretty sure you already know that, and that you know you're acting like a jerk. And that's just what you've chosen to be. So now I pull out my little, right, my little permanent marker, and I write jerk on you. And, we go about our business. But it's so not true. And coming from the endotype that you come from, one of your gifts is around like this identity piece. Like to kind of, you have a unique ability and a natural gift of seeing who people are and seeing that there's commonalities and there's differences.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people can't see that. A lot of people have no idea. And so that really gets in their way when it comes to feeling like they can come forward and say, I've noticed something.
Yeah.
Well, because I'm pretty sure you already know.
Yeah. Well, in our sessions though, because it's a safe container.
Yep.
You know, so if they do have that awareness or I find a way to point that out, we can talk about it in a non-threatening way. Because I never talk with their managers. This isn't about performance. Very rarely does somebody come to me saying, hey, this person needs a coach because they've got a performance problem. Very rarely, because then it's too late.
Right.
That's performance management. That's not coaching. But when they can see it, then they can say, okay, so yeah, I can see now how people see me as angry and I'm not. So what am I feeling? So sometimes I'll have them, anger is what I call an iceberg emotion. Mm-hmm. It's kind of up here. And then there's like 10 or 12 that are underneath it. Same for happiness, same for sad. But what really is it? Are you jealous? Are you envious? Are you upset? And if you're angry, then let's figure that out. Because the other part of emotional intelligence is, just because you have an emotion doesn't mean you need to express that emotion. So what emotion would be more helpful in that conversation that keeps the other person out of that fear-based brain? So interestingly enough, frustration or disappointment are really connected to sadness, not anger. But it can get confusing. But if I come to you and I express, you know what, Laura, I'm really disappointed about how this podcast went. You will be more likely to access empathy and stay in your executive brain than, what do you mean it turned out badly? I just did, oh, my lighting was fine. I told you all the things you needed.
Right.
It's all on you. Then it's not going to go. And so, you know, there is a point where it's that whole stimulus and response, there's that pause. And now choose, so what emotion do I really want to express here that will help the conversation? It could be connecting. It's like, I really want to connect with you because this behavior is getting in your way. And I, as your leader, feel like I want to be able to help you with that so that you can see it. Because it's that whole thing, if you don't know you have a problem, you can't fix it. Mm-hmm. But you kind of dialing in to say, okay, what do I really want as a result of this conversation? And then what do I need to think? Because your thoughts are going to create your feelings. And in between the thought and the feeling is where we make stories up.
Yep.
You know, it's a little bit of the MSU. And if you can figure out your pattern of stories that are getting you off track, then you can maintain control of that emotion, which then is going to lead to the actions and lead to the result. But so often we get so derailed by that emotion, and it lives in us longer than it physically needs to. There is a chemical reaction with all emotions. And I think it's any between 8 seconds and 90 seconds, I think, is how long that chemical lives in our body. So if you can just pause for 90 seconds, then you might have an ability or an option to choose a different emotion that might be more helpful.
Yeah.
But so often, you know, you come at me with anger and boom, it's a microsecond. But if I'm more, you know, Laura usually isn't that angry. What must have happened in order for her to get that angry that she's coming to me? So what else might be going on for you so that I can stay in my executive brain, yep, being curious and access empathy and compassion? But it's a skill to learn. And it takes a few stub toes to figure out where you get off track. But when I can help clients understand, okay, so what just happened here? What's the commonality? Let's talk about this in a neutral setting. What just happened? Like, oh yeah, I only had 2 cups of coffee, not 3 this morning. Or I was hungry and I was hangry.
Yes.
So let's wait to have that conversation until after lunch when you've been fed and watered.
Yep.
You know, because there's the biology too.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, and to know how, I mean, the more emotionally intelligent that you are able to get to be, right? I don't know that, I think probably the majority of us don't grow up in a home that teaches us how to do that. And we have to learn that as adults or choose whether or not we're going to take on that task. As coaches, a lot of us already have. But learning how you best process through and then setting that up. So for myself, I best process through emotion through verbal processing. Like, I can watch myself emotionally process. Here's a difficult conversation. Here's something at work that didn't go the way that I wanted it to, the way that I needed it to. It's made like, oh, look, I'm making it mean these things about me or these things about them. That's not okay. And I can generally handle it in that moment, but it doesn't mean that all that emotion is gone for me or that I'm done with it, because I tend to be a ruminator. So I have a few people in my life that I have set up as some verbal processors, right? I have a Marco Polo group, I have a Voxer group, and I can call up and talk to some people or just talk it out. And at the beginning, I can frame it as, I don't even really care if you listen to this message. You can listen if you want, but I just need to talk out some stuff. Yeah. And for me, I can't just, because I've tried, right? Can I just go in my car and just talk to myself? It's a mental thing. It works better if I think that I'm talking to somebody else, right? Sure. And somebody that I know, and I talk it out, and then it's able to lose some of that punch, some of that spark. So, you know, knowing how it works for you is just a huge, huge thing.
Well, yeah, and I think you bring up a good point of emotions are, I mean, they are physical energy in our body, and they do need to process and ultimately release, just like anything else that we consume. It needs to go through. And until it's gone through, it's still going to be there. Because I've had clients, they were in a conversation, it wasn't supposed to be confrontational, and then all of a sudden it blew up. And when they look back, it's like, oh yeah, I had that little nagging dot. And I let it get bigger.
Yep. And have you heard of the somatic work, TRE?
A little bit about it. It's
trauma
and tremors.
Yeah, it's, you know, like, so when you're in an accident, you get shakes, right? Mm-hmm. A car accident. Or when you see a little kid that has some kind of a trauma situation, frequently they'll, right, they cry, they shake, they shiver, and then they're done. Over the years, we learn not to do that. And so a lot of the energy stays stuck in different parts of our body. And so it's basically a really, really gentle system that helps you induce tremors, right? Like, and induce not like, oh, let's go relive the past, or, oh, let's, no, yeah. It just, there's a specific body posture that induces these tremors, and it works a lot of the old energy out of your body. It's fascinating. I have a coach friend of mine, Olivia, who is, I don't know, certified, trained yeah. to be able to do that. And it's just a really interesting process.
Yeah. Cause I mean, like you said, we don't teach people how to deal with emotions,
yep.
you know, or even what emotion are we feeling? Cause you think of a child that skins their knee, like, don't be sad. Or they have to share a toy, but like, don't be mad. And so they associate those physical things. Ah, that's sadness. This is mad.
Right. And the whole time we're telling them, don't be.
Yeah. But it's a natural, I think all emotions are natural and that they serve a purpose. It's deciding, so what purpose does this serve that then can help us decide, okay, so how do I use this? Because I, you know, like I said, anger, I think there is reason for anger. You see a yeah. child abused, and anger is, I think, a very valid, very oh, absolutely. Valid emotion. You don't want to go in with necessarily compassion for the abuser. It's like, no, this is not okay by any standards.
Yeah.
But it's kind of understanding what's underneath that. And what I think is really fascinating too is for happiness. Although they're more comfortable emotions. Okay, so what happened in order for me to feel that? Because then you can have a playbook to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just avoiding the bad ones, if I can know what creates happiness or joy, I can access it a lot more easily and yeah. more frequently.
Yeah. Yeah. What do I need to be at that place of happy? Or for me, I don't know. For me, when I stopped chasing happiness and when I started inviting in peace and creating peace, I found that happiness was just a byproduct of that, right? Yeah. I laugh every day and just, you know, like I'm raising two teen sons. So I'm not going to lie. It's a lot of fart jokes over here. but, you know, life is super, super funny. And when I'm at peace, I can enjoy those little moments of humor that are so rich. And when I am too busy or I don't have peace about things, I'm too busy to laugh, too busy, you know, too, it just runs right over it. So yeah, fascinating work. Love it. You must love Atlas. Do you love Atlas of the Heart? Brené Brown's book on emotion?
I did read it. It took me a little while just because it was so different than her other books. It felt like, you know, but once I got into it and got farther in it, it's like, okay, but now it's a very useful tool. Cause like when we want to feel connected, these are the emotions.
Yeah.
The productive ones and the unproductive ones. Mm-hmm. So that has been helpful for my clients to figure it out. Okay. So what's really going on here when you feel disconnected? What's really going on?
Yep. Yep. For my 19-year-old son, when Atlas came out, we were listening to her podcast. I listened to Brené frequently. And he was like, I'm gonna need a copy of that book. And I was like, well, I plan to get one. And he said, no, I'm gonna need my own copy. Because he wanted to process his own emotions. So he definitely got his own copy.
Yeah.
Ask and ye shall receive. When it comes to emotional processing for a teenager, you betcha. You get to have that.
Well, and what a gift for him.
Yeah.
Because I mean, moving from young adulthood into adulthood, there's a whole lot of stuff that we don't teach or prepare kids. It's like, okay, 18, you're an adult. Fly be free. I don't want to interfere as a parent.
It's such a hilarious joke to me, especially with these. We're this generation, right? Because he was 16 when, or just before he got to be 16 was when COVID started to kick off.
Okay.
So not only are we raising a generation whose social lives are far less person to person, right? Mm-hmm. They're online, they're on video games already. Then we then that was all that existed for a period of time for these young ones. Wow. And so there's this whole generation, his generation, probably a good third to a half of them don't seek their driver's license at 16 because they don't need it, and they just, their social lives are online, which then limits that ability to emotion, to be involved in that emotion, right? Because if somebody makes you mad, it's like, oh, I gotta go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Shut off the video game. Mm-hmm. Instead of you are at the skating rink and somebody made you mad and, oh my word, Becky, did you say, you know, like whatever. You gotta,
but especially, yeah. And if they don't have a driver's license, they don't have a ride. So they gotta wait for an adult to come pick them up. So it's like, okay, I can't leave.
Yep. Yep. It's a whole different bag.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we like to do in the podcast is kind of turn our attention to the coaching industry. Mm-hmm. You have a unique perspective, both from an emotional intelligence point of view, from having been in HR, which is really just corporate coaching for a really long time. It's a little, and right. And making sure all the I's are dotted, T's are crossed kind of thing. But what trends or challenges are you seeing in the industry right now that are concerning to you?
I think one, and this is a personal thing for me, is I chose to get training. So I have a couple hundred hours worth of training. And a lot of that was more for me, and it came naturally to me. So maybe I didn't really need it, but it gave me, I guess, a sense of assurance that I knew what was happening. And so this is probably more my thing than the coaching industry, but other people that, you know, hang out their shingle and say that they're going to do this. And I'm like, but what about empowering questions? But what about not leading the client? Do you know that? And it's an issue that I need to let go of, because they're not my client. And for a lot of them, we're not in the same, you know, we're not looking at the same niche. Mm-hmm. And so it's more my issue. And if their clients are getting results and they're willing to pay what they're paying for those results, then that's a personal interaction. But I also don't think that everybody needs to go through training, because some people are natural at this and they do find a way to create a safe place and point out spinach in the teeth and, you know, those types of things that they wouldn't necessarily benefit from the training. So that for me, I think is one of the things. My other pet peeve is the coach's business is that they coach coaches to be coaches. You know, lately on LinkedIn, it's all this digital marketing and I can get you 80 calls a day. And I'm like, well, no, I'm more relationship driven. I'm not looking for 80 calls a day.
Well, and that's one of those situations. Yeah. Because I think your two challenges there overlap slightly. What I am seeing is, especially in terms of business coaching and, right, like finding business expertise, mm-hmm. I see more in that business expertise arena where people are not really coaching. They're selling it like they're coaching, but what they're doing is kind of preaching. Mm-hmm. Or teaching a model that's worked for them.
Yeah.
But they're not using those empowering questions. They're not exploring, like, what works for you. Like, there's certain frameworks. You know, when I'm talking to a coach, I know you're going to have to meet new people.
Yeah.
Right? We have to meet new people, pull people into, you know, whether you want to call it a funnel or not. But you need to meet new people. Are you going to do that on social? Are you going to do that on virtual networking? Are you going to do that? There's so many ways to do that. Then you need to cultivate a relationship. There's lots of ways to do it. But so many people are standing up and going, I'm a business coach and I've built a coaching business where I made six figures and I've helped multiple people make six figures. A lot of times what they're doing is they're really great salespeople. They're working with other really great salespeople to sell programs to coaches. And coaches love to buy stuff. They love to buy tools. So some caution needs to be exercised there to make sure that they're actually providing your solution or a solution they think everyone will benefit from.
Yeah. And it does take some discerning because, certainly early on, I don't know, it's like the mosquitoes when you go out and sit on your patio, they just know you're there. Like as a new coach, these people, I don't know. And the algorithm, I did my coach training in 16 and 17. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there was as many, maybe not as well-designed algorithms, but it was almost like they came out of the woodwork. It's like, oh, we got a new graduating class.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, they're showing up in your DMs and promising you the world. And it does take discernment because those of us who have been around the coaching industry for a while, we've probably fallen into a time or two where we've invested money in something that we walked away a little disappointed. We are a little bit more cautious, but these systems that are not, or these people that are not selling great stuff, they're going to continue to sell that until people stop buying.
Right.
So why does everybody keep sliding into my DMs trying to sell me a six-figure program? Because somebody's buying it.
Yeah.
We got to stop buying it.
Right.
If we want it to go away.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in terms of marketing for you, what have been some of the tools that have, allowed people to come into your world, nurtured those relationships, brought them into your place? How have you personally found, the path to marketing success?
I've done the LinkedIn and having a fairly consistent presence and just offering. I think a lot of coaches struggle with the salesy piece. And so I don't necessarily have a call to action all the time, but I do try to be generous and just giving something, at least on a weekly basis for people to say, that's something that I can work on. So something small. A lot of times I'll ask my clients, what's the smallest thing that you can do today that you know you cannot fail at, and do that. So I ask them just to take tiny steps. So that's been my approach. And I have gotten a few clients just through awareness and just that presence. And somehow I appeared in their feed. Lately, really, it has been now that we can open up to in-person things, is attending and consistently attending networking events. So that if it is on Monday mornings, you're going to see me and have a conversation and just learn more about each other and share what I do without a heavy, here's my business card, I'll call you in a week or tomorrow or on my way home.
Right.
Type of thing. Because I do think, I think for coaches, I think it's similar with hairdressers and probably doctors. It's that it needs to be a close fit. And I'm not the fit for everybody. Right. I'm not going to be really harsh and call you on your stuff. I will do that gently, but I'm not going to be in your face. Some people want in your face. And I know people who can do that and I can refer you out. And they will be really assertive, if not aggressive. So I'm not the match for everybody. But I also believe in the power of that networking of that they might know somebody who, you're out with your friends. And saying, there's got to be something more.
Yeah.
I just can't get there. And my employer isn't doing it for me.
Yeah.
And so,
you have a lot of that collaborative energy. I've part of what I do is learning to listen to the vibe that people bring across, because that's very influential in their marketing and in their branding. And yeah, you have this, it's not an in your face, I'm the boss, listen to me. It is more like, let's build together.
Yeah. And if you're ready to do the work, that my clients that have been really ready to lean in and do the work, they've seen amazing results.
Yeah.
How their relationships are changing, how they're able to handle difficult things, how they're able to lead with the energy, and how to respond to somebody else of like, okay, well, they did something that I think was disrespectful, but I'm going to assume good intent. And so now I'm going to be curious as to, so what's really going on there? And it helps them not get into that stress state. Yeah. Or at least not stay there very long. And that's just healthy overall. Yeah.
Right. That's what I was thinking as you were describing it. I bet it's a lot more than their quality of life at work that is changing for these individuals.
Yeah, because generally I'm speaking to them about business type things. But lately, or a few times, it's like, you know what, I'm having a challenge with my teenage daughter, or, you know, my, you know, soon to be adult son.
Yeah.
And so that's what we talk about, because that's what's most important. If we don't talk about it, they're not hearing me, because right. they're thinking of their teenage daughter or their soon to be adult son.
And they're going to bring that into their work.
Yeah. And that's a waste of time. Yep. So, you know, let's solve a problem that's most important today. And mm-hmm. that may or may not be, it's, I think it's all intertwined. Mm-hmm. It may not on the surface look like it's work related, but it is, because you can't yep. leave your emotions at the door. You just can't.
Nope. Well, great chat today. I've appreciated it. Thank you for, again, thanks for being on the podcast and sharing your wisdom. I love the emotional intelligence work, and just really how to apply that in a business setting. Because normally, right, there's a little opposition. People don't always want that in there. Part of the reason we do this is to build a coaching collaborative team, right? So if our coaches are listening and either recognizing that maybe they need a little tune-up, or they know some places that you might be a great fit for, is LinkedIn the best place to connect them to you?
Yeah, I'm most active on LinkedIn. Okay. As a marketing thing, I have made a Facebook page. It's just not very populated.
Sure.
So there's not as much there. But yeah, LinkedIn is where I am most present. And I do that under my own name, not my company name, just to make it more personal. But yeah, if you just find me at Paula Rauman Bueller, you'll see the things that I've posted there.
Yep.
I'm more than happy to have a conversation about the work that I do, if I can refer them to other people, or if there's just... coaches like to talk to coaches too. So
yeah, we sure do. That's one of the things I love about my podcast.
Yeah.
We will drop those links in the show notes. So if you would like to talk to Paula and make it easy when you're walking and listening to the podcast or driving your car, just go into those show notes later and be able to check us out there. Thanks again for sharing your time and your expertise.
Yeah. Thanks, Laura.